Well, if you're tracking with us, we're going to talk about friction today. And responding to disagreements with respect brings you closer.
Anybody here never had an argument? Okay, good. We're all on the same page.
All couples face friction. It's just normal. Arguments, they can be expected.
Duh, yeah. I mean, we are two different people from different backgrounds, different personalities, different perspectives. I mean, we just can't merge without some kind of friction, right?
That's why we call it friction.
Fusion.
Fusion, too, yes. We call it fusion. It's two lives being forged together through heat, pressure, and tension.
Now, the biggest problem is, though, that instead of attacking the problem, we end up attacking each other.
Yeah, and the spouse, they become the target. You see, we begin to blame the spouse.
That's because you are the problem.
No. You are the problem.
I'm the problem? Are you kidding me? You're the one that always is.
See, blaming doesn't get you anywhere. No. I mean, let's just face it. You don't get anywhere. So understand that we don't really stop at friction. It never stops there. You see, we were all born with guns in our hands.
And we carry these guns the rest of our lives. And they are big, and they are powerful.
So, we go on the attack, and we actually attack the person. Ha ha!
We start shooting out at each other, probably out of self-defense and disappointment. Oh, I'm a bad shot, though. He's lucky.
Because, you see, she is the enemy. You never listen to me. I mean, you always make decisions without me. I want some say in this marriage, too, you know.
Okay, I don't like the way you're talking to me. Besides, I can't wait forever for you to make up your mind. Oh, sorry. Bad shot.
You aren't listening to me. You show me no respect. I'm tired of this. It's not acceptable.
If I waited for you, nothing would ever get done around here. We wouldn't make any decisions.
Well, there you go again. You just go ahead, decide everything. I'm tired of this.
Oh, now you don't even have an opinion. There you go, walking away again. Can't we ever finish a discussion without you taking off?
Sadly, you might be winning the argument, but you're losing the relationship.
That's true. Now, what would happen if we use that same energy? And fighting takes a lot of energy, doesn't it? It really is exhausting. So if we use that same energy that we use fighting against each other, what if we used it to fight with each other and for each other? Wouldn't that be a switch?
Bob, would you stand up, please, Bob?
Oh, yeah.
Bob, we love you. Our amazing buddy at bocce ball. Just stand right here, Bob, and we dare you not to move. Okay. Because you see, the truth is, things really change when we have a common target, right?
Uh-huh.
Isn't that right, babe?
You got it. We got a problem,
Let's go
babe.
After our problem, babe.
Okay, sound the alarm.
Babe.
Here we go. Woo! Oh, yeah. Woo-hoo. Okay, I got the dud gun.
Yeah, it's okay, babe, because back to back, we can solve anything.
Yeah, we can. And remember, Proverbs 18:21 says, words kill or words bring life. That's your choice.
Responding to disagreements with respect brings you closer. Give Bob a hand. Thank you, sir. All righty.
Wouldn't it be great if every time you had an argument, you brought out the guns like that? It would kind of make it fun, wouldn't it?
Okay. Do you remember the Wilkies? we have friends who told us we were there. I was their professor at Bible College, and they're pastoral couple now. And I'm just going to say like it is. I'm brash, right? So, but they were a couple that were rather rotund. Did I say that okay? Okay, good. And they were hilarious. Their daughter and our daughter were best friends, And this was their the way they solved problems. They would go to their bedroom, close the door so they wouldn't bug the kids. But every point they made, they had to take off a piece of clothing. Now, you got to picture this because it's quite interesting. But pretty soon, they're being really mad at each other, but they're getting closer to buck naked. And they finally would just say, we started trying to take seriously the fact that your wife is yelling at you mostly naked and your husband's responding back, maybe just in his gitch left. And pretty soon they're laughing about how stupid it is. They're fighting over this. And it's not that they necessarily went any place in the bedroom. It's just their habit was we can only fight if we start removing clothes because for them it dissolved everything. We don't recommend it. We've never tried it. Maybe we should try it.
Maybe. We could make our own rules, too. I mean, you can only throw as many darts as pieces of clothing you got on. So I would plan my fights.
I know I've been had. All right.
Oh, yeah.
So friction isn't wrong, but it is inevitable. That's where we start there. You see that in your notes. Friction isn't wrong, but is inevitable. Listen clearly. Sinful, selfish people can't help but hurting each other. You can't help it. We just, by nature, have a dark side. I was a caring youth worker as I went into the ministry, and it was beyond me to even think that I could be somehow selfish because all I did was care for young people. But come back to this relationship, she would keep calling me on, you're just being selfish. I say, you can't be smacking me at that all the time, right? But the point is, we really by nature can have a dark side, and it really does affect things. And you know, what's the nature of that friction? Well, it's the differences of opinion, our selfishness, our willingness to merge. I mean, two different backgrounds, personalities, wills, perspectives, families of origin, two different value sets, different levels of confidence, different skill levels. Beyond those differences, Donald and I, by nature, as you know, are really different. I was the youngest child.
Spoiled. I was the middle child.
I come from first-generation Christians.
I come from a very long line of Christians. I don't know how many generations back.
I come from a stay-at-home mom.
My mom always had an outside job.
Our family was home every evening.
And my parents worked a lot of evenings. My dad was a pastor.
The kids were always supervised.
You know what? We were on our own often, very often.
And I lived in the same house the entire life.
I moved every 3 to 5 years.
Mm. There are some differences, but how about the backgrounds? That's one thing, but what about our personalities? You know them already. I am very impatient.
I can be too compliant.
I am time-driven.
I'm ish.
I'm competitive.
And you know what? I love it when everybody's a winner.
Yeah. I'm critical and I'm aggressive.
And I will withdraw and back down when in conflict.
I say, do it right or don't do it at all.
And I am fine with it at a point where it comes to it. That's good enough.
Yeah. I engage really deep talk. I like to talk deep.
And I can also enjoy chit-chat.
I kind of have emotional extremes, highs and lows.
And I've been described as vanilla.
I feel I can conquer anything.
And I'm okay with giving up.
So you see, you add to the fact that we're all born with a gun on our neck, and you shouldn't be shocked that there's fighting. Look what it says in James. Remember, in marriage, what caused all these fights and quarrels among the two of you? Well, you don't have what you desire, the battles within you, so you desire what you don't have, so you kill verbally, you covet, you can't get what you want, so you quarrel and you fight. You do not have because you do not ask God. Hey, how about God bring some unity between us? So sinful, selfish people can hurt one another.
Yeah. And look at number two. My mate is not the bullseye. Oh, boy. Sometimes when we get into an argument, he is the enemy. He is the bullseye. I am going to shoot at that bullseye until it's dead. But you know what? That should not be our target. Our target should not be around their neck. And having arguments isn't about assigning blame. Having arguments is to solve a problem. There is something that needs to be solved. Sometimes, though, the very things we fight about are the things that drew me to Dave in the first place. They used to be his strengths. Now they're his weaknesses. I used to love it when he was on time to pick me up for dates. Now it drives me crazy when he has to be on time for everything. You know, so you see the very things that I saw as strengths now are turned around and I see as weaknesses. And those are the things I want to change about them.
Yeah. And you know, if we work hard not to make our mate the bullseye, but look for Bob. Sorry, Bob.
We need a Bob in our relationship. Yes, we do.
But as we said earlier, remember it says in Proverbs there, words kill, words give life. They're either poison or fruit. You choose. See, you can bring words out today that are refreshing or damaging every day. Your choice. Thirdly, we have to admit that we have a problem and solve it together. That was when I walked down there and put the target on Bob. I mean, we have a problem. And instead of it coming between us and being a wall and shooting each other, we try to stand shoulder to shoulder and say, honey, we've got a problem. Because one of the things you've got to realize that the relationship is more important than the issue. But time and time again, the issue becomes more important than the relationship. Here's the deal, people. There's always going to be issues. But there's one relationship. Always going to be issues. This has to stay strong. Remember? Shared purpose. Woohoo! Equal voice and mutual respect. Now, solve your problems. Because our purpose is we're going to stay strong. There's going to be more problems. There'll be more. There'll be more.
Oh, yeah.
Put the target up and shoot at it together instead of you the problem, your problem. No, you the problem. You get nowhere. So really important that we can work to stay on the same page. We've actually, from time to time, when we've been in a little bit of an impasse, we actually take a piece of paper like this, felt pen, and write the problem on the paper and stick it to the cupboard and stand side by side and say, okay, let's look at the problem with the right perspective. Because we can identify what the problem is. We disagree on when we're going to leave to whatever. You know what I'm saying? We got something we got to solve. When I do my marriage counseling, I have one thing I do quite often with couples that are at a bit of an impasse. I say, look, you're intelligent people. You're a vice president of a company. You're a head nurse. Let's talk honestly about whether you can solve this. I says, just imagine right now that you opened your wallet and you gave me $500, ma'am. Sir, you gave me $500. And I was holding $1,000 of yours in my hand. And I said to you right back, if you give me the answer to this problem in 15 minutes or less, I will give you your $1,000 back. You get this twinkle in their eye, and all of a sudden, I said, why is that? Why is it if I got $1,000, you can solve this problem? Is that not stupid? You can figure it out. You're smart people. It's not about it. It's the will. Will I let it go? Will I surrender? Will I quit fighting for my right and my perspective? And it's such a beautiful transformation when I say, okay, give me the $1,000. Let's play the game. No, we can solve this. That's right. Because if there's a will, there's a way every time. Every time. So, we got to admit we have a problem. So, we got some great scripture there. I love what it says in John chapter 16. In marriage, I've told you all this so that in me you'll have peace. Yeah, here on earth, you're going to have many trials and sorrows in your marriage. But take heart, I've overcome all the problems I can face in a marriage. Or look at 1 Peter there. Finally, all of you, live in harmony with your spouse. Be sympathetic. Love as brothers. Love as sisters. Be humble, compassionate. Do not repay evil for evil or insult for insult. Boy, you've done that. We've done that. But rather with a blessing, because to this you were called that you may inherit a blessing. For whoever would love life and see good days must keep his tongue from evil and his lips from deceitful speech in the marriage. It gets really personal when you keep adding in the marriage. All of a sudden, it's not out there someplace. Oh, yeah, God, we got to just follow you, God. Love all the people. Yeah, it's a little harder to love all the people when it's here. But that's the true litmus test of faith. So, we're going to go to discussion starter number 10. Discussion starter number 10. Understanding your sources of friction. We got 46 sources of friction possible here. Plus, you can add your own. So you're simply going to choose the 5 most common that you guys face and then just share with each other and agree on the first 2 you're going to talk about of those 10, okay? So give me some music, Peter. We'll give them about 5 minutes to do this one. Jump in and have fun. I can get my fabulous assistant to join me again up here. She just gets so into a project that she can't withhold from finishing. All right.
I need order. Get those things back in the gun.
All right. So we want to now talk about when things heat up, skills go up in smoke. Now, how many of you have ever been in a kayak? Put your hands up. Okay, good. That's really cool. Up in this area of the country, that's at least three quarters of you. Well, have you ever done an Eskimo roll? Now, some of you serious kayakers will know what I'm talking about. The rest of us want that thing straight up and down all the time. But I remember being in a lake similar to this at a camp I was speaking at in Manitoba, in central Canada there. And you practice the Eskimo roll, which is turning the kayak over and back up again. You practice an Eskimo roll in shallow water. So when you're partway under, if you can't get the motion right with the paddle in your hips, that you actually use the bottom of the lake to tip yourself back up. Okay? So I remember practicing. I'm a little bit of a stubborn sort, and I remember going at it, I'm going to get this Eskimo roll. I'm, you know, half drowning myself, but the bottom's there, and push back up, and this is stupid, and try it again. And about maybe 35, 40 minutes, I finally got the Eskimo roll. And I said, nailed it. I got it. I knew I'd get it. Took me another half hour to do the second one. Okay, so here's the deal. If you know whitewater kayaking, There's torrents and boulders and rushing water. It's different than the placid lake out here. So you're going down there and you're trying to keep the tip of the kayak, the bow there, so it's not crashing into a rock. You're dodging and trying to stay ahead of the current and all this. And I'll tell you what. Everything you practice in the lake with calm, placid water and the bottom right there all goes to naught when you go upside down in a rapid. You're not thinking, oh, now I think I'll do an Eskimo roll. You're thinking, oh, my God, I'm going to die. My head's banging on rocks, and where's the bottom? And it's moving around like this, and there's no Eskimo roll in sight. Not a chance. It is bail out of this thing, get your head up, and let the kayak go downstream for all you care. Now, I had this skill. I could do an Eskimo roll. I did two in an hour and a half. Under duress, why can't I just do the Eskimo roll? Because when your skills are tested, they go up in smoke. When things get tense between you and somebody precious to you, you forget all this stuff here. And it's... Why? Because we don't practice them enough. And so, well, we go from there.
So that's why we have to practice.
That's right.
But, yeah, I'll tell you.
We have to discuss the rules and practice them.
Yes, write them down. Okay.
Write them down.
So what skills you do have are quickly tested. Let's talk about the skills first of all. What kind of skills do you have? Where did you get them from? More often than not, you get them from your family of origin. That's what you grew up with. That's going to be your default drive because that's what you've seen, that's what you've practiced, that's what you've studied for many years. Or maybe you revised those skills a little bit, you know, once you got into elementary school and you realized if you wanted something from somebody and they weren't going to give it to you, you just said, I'm not going to be your friend anymore. And then they quickly fell into line. So that could be a skill that you have. Or maybe anger. Maybe it's throwing things. Maybe it's yelling. Maybe it's...
manipulative tears.
That could be it, too. You need to quit using that, Dave. And then, or maybe it's that you learned some skills of being able to just talk rationally. Or maybe it was controlled emotions. Maybe you can very easily verbalize your emotions, but maybe your spouse can't. So you see how it's not just all up to you, but there's two of you now. And these skills that you've got are quickly tested. But you know what? We're very capable people. We need to be able to say ourselves, you know what? I can find a way to resolve conflicts. It's an attitude check usually, isn't it? If we just lay down our agenda, check our attitudes, and go, what is my goal here? I want to get through this argument. I want us to be closer than before. That's only a choice that I can make, though. Dave can't tell me to smarten up. Can you imagine?
I do.
You try.
Doesn't work.
Doesn't work. You only do it once, usually. but we all need to learn new ways to act responsibly. And if we keep our goal in mind, responding to disagreements with respect can bring you closer. If we remember that, it'll take you a long way.
I have this ongoing filter, I guess you'd say, because we do a lot of work now in marriage and family, that as I read scripture, I keep trying to throw it around. What does it mean in a marriage? What does this mean in a marriage, right? And we're, for the fourth year in a row, we're reading through the Bible together in a year, and there's so many scripture that just, but this one here in 2 Corinthians, check it out. So this is now me talking to you. It's Paul talking to Corinthians, of course, but imagine me talking to you here at Green Lake. For I'm afraid that when I come back to you here, Donald and I, I may not find you as I want you to be, and you may not find Donald and I as you want us to be either, but I fear that there may be discord, jealousy, fits of rage, selfish ambition, slander, gossip, arrogance, and disorder in your marriages. You say, well, what are you doing that for? I said, listen, 3/4 of the people I counsel in my private practice are committed Christian people. That verse applies. That verse applies. Of course, nobody here at Green Lake because it's all kumbaya marriages. But you see, the beautiful thing is there's a way. And of course, number two, the closer the relationship, the higher the stakes. The closer the relationship, the higher the stakes. Somehow we feel we have to keep the upper hand. We can't feel like we're getting run over or something. And the relationship, this is the most important thing, but somehow it elevates the importance of the discussion. We're confused by the attitude of the other person or their shortness or their tone. I don't like your tone. Your tone.
That's my line.
Often.
Like your tone.
Often.
Yeah.
And we just can't believe the viewpoint, and how different they can be. So first of all, the closer the relationship, the higher the stakes. Thirdly, our fears can cause us to attack or run. You've heard fight or flight, right? You go at it or you just walk away. And we got to understand that fears trump skills. Panic sets in, just like in the kayak. And we react. And, of course, it depends on whether you're a woodpecker or a turtle, how you handle this fight or flight. Right? The woodpecker is kind of going, okay, bring it on. Let's talk about this. Turtle says, that's up. I'm out of here. And, of course,
and sometimes turtles actually run. They're fast turtles.
What can I say?
Just quoting somebody.
Exactly. Exactly. Okay. So let's look at the fears here together. There's 5 of them we're going to look at.
Okay, the first one is the fear of invalidation, where my opinions and feelings are usually disregarded or belittled. And that's when I feel like my thoughts and feelings and opinions are negated, like they just don't even count. And I don't feel like my spouse really appreciates who I am if it's different from what from him or his expectations. That's invalidation.
Okay, now... we've had some really cool discussions off the stage with a lot of neat couples here. So there's about 3 couples need to hear this because they can identify to Donald and I a lot. Okay, so she's grown in confidence. Remember, I've always been this confident. Okay, that's the difference, right?
Our fights would not take very long in the beginning because he would just state his point and I would turtle, and that's the end of the conflict.
Mm-hmm. Now, as she gets over her insecurities and starts to have a voice, which I want her to have. But I have to really start adjusting because now she wants to have an opinion on things and I'm not used to having that opinion. But here's the complicated thing. I implied it the other day, but we actually explained it with 2 different groups the other day, that as she grows in her freedom to speak her voice, which is a good thing, she assumes that speaking her voice means that's got to be heard and done. You see, and you can't attach your opinion to your worth. You can't attach your opinion to your worth. Your worth is separate. I love you. You're amazing. You have an opinion. That doesn't mean it's attached together. So I may disagree. And of course, I'm straight up. I'm a debater. That's not a good idea. Oh, you don't like my idea. No. You have an opinion. Share your opinion. Great. I disagree. Oh, you're not listening to me. I'm listening perfectly. You think this, I think this.
And this is wrong and this isn't.
Well, tell me why you think it's right. I mean, let's talk about it. But it's just because you declare it doesn't make it trumps everything else I've ever said all my life. You see, and so we have to work this through because this is not easy. Now, there's a few of you who are getting the nod feeling. Uh-huh, you can identify, right? And it's a hard thing because I want her to have her voice. I want her to give her opinion. And it's not always easy, is it?
No, but I could give you a few suggestions on how to make it easier.
Yeah, I just agree with you all the time now.
No.
Okay, so go to number two, the fear of
futility.
This is futile, isn't it? Okay.
Yeah. I feel resolving the issue will take too much work and energy, and it hasn't ever worked before. And you know what? Quite often that leaves only one wanting to work. The other one is just feeling too tired and too beat up to enter into that battle again. And the memories of it not working before leave them feeling like, I'm turtling. I'm out of here. I'm running. It could be unresolved hurt from the past, and that's before spouse, you know, from your childhood or growing up years. I've never argued. I've never been given voice to argue. I grew up in a home where whatever mom and dad said, that was the end. And one of our daughter-in-laws grew up in a home where mom and dad welcomed her opinions. Like, if you have something to say, you say it, and you stand your ground, you work it out with mom and dad. And so her coming into our family has been a challenge sometimes, but a good challenge, because it makes us realize that, you know what, just because we're saying something or we think something, it's good to see that somebody can actually work it through rationally and get to a good resolve.
You know, there's many of you that are starting to have kids getting married, and some of you have many married kids. This is a great thing for those of you who are starting to add, like our son's engaged, getting married, you know, all of that. Here's what you do. Every time you add an in-law kid into the family, you have just a little family meeting. It doesn't have to be long. Just at the end of some meal, you say, hey, I just want to say something. And this just could be 5 minutes. But I would suggest the dad, but mom and dad can agree to do it together. But we did it every time one of our kids got married. And I just said, look, we'll start in the order, just so everybody knows. And our first two kids were married a week apart, okay? So it was.
Try that one.
We had a complicated space. The same summer we were starting to be missionaries and raising our support, we had two kids get married. There's a God who supplies, I'll tell you. But the cool thing was is with Chris, my son-in-law, and Carly, my daughter-in-law, two additions to the family within a week apart. And I said to all of us together, because our 6 plus 2 is 8, and I said, with two more people coming to the family, understand that the family order, the family dynamic has to change. Because we want to embrace Carly and Chris into our family, equal partners to the rest of us here. So things will never be the same. They're going to be better. They're going to be different. And we have to, in the same way there's an alliance between mom and sons and dad and daughters, and there's this crisscross relationships, we now have to bring Chris and Carly into this mix. And we now, the configuration of the family has to change, because instead of a 6-sided family, it's an 8-sided family. You see? And then when we added, you know, our son-in-law, Jeremy, we had the same discussion. Just so you know, remember I had this discussion about Chris and Jody? Just want to remind you, or Chris and Carly, just want to remind you that with Jeremy coming to the family, things have to change again. There's 9 of us here now, and we all have to build trust and relationship with each other. So we have to continue. We got to welcome Jeremy, but our family changes because of that. And see, there's wisdom to that, because everybody continues to have a sense of belonging and voice, even though they're the in-law kids, right?
And with those of you that are starting your families now, same thing. Mm-hmm. It was the two of you. Now you're adding another little body. Yeah. And you know what? That little body's going to have its own opinions and its own
Some
wants.
Of them are quite strong.
Yeah. So your family dynamics change there, too, with each child you add, too. Yeah. And you have to go with it, and you have to work with it.
So letter C, the third fear is the fear of rejection. I'm afraid any disagreement will lead to my spouse's withdrawal of their love. They'll be angry. They'll punish me. They'll isolate me. And so there's blaming, and there's condescension, and there's withdrawing and isolation and defensiveness. And I don't want to say anything because I'll just get rejected and shunned. That's a real sign of immaturity, by the way. Fourthly, letter D, the fear of denial. My spouse simply says, "What are you talking about?" And their selfishness and their blind spots actually prevent healthy resolution. You try your best to show them maybe where they're missing something, and you do it as gently as you can, but they just maybe lose control. They're going to deny. They're going to do the my way, the highway. They have to win. They say, are you crazy? I'm not, that's your problem. And how many people have come to me saying, yeah, my husband won't come for counseling, my wife won't come for counseling because he says, it's your problem. I don't have any problem with this relationship. If you want to go get fixed, go get fixed. Because there's just a high sense of denial.
Going back to that fear of rejection, you said it's a sign of immaturity. Is that the person having the fear of rejection or the person that is rejecting?
You see, what happens is when we have a spouse that is being told something and in their defensiveness, they reject the other person, I'm the one that's rejecting is the immature person. Because by rejecting and isolating and cutting them off, I'm going to show them that they can't try to tell me I have issues, right? So I'm going to show them, so I punish them for 3 days of silence, and then they finally, oh, honey, I really didn't mean to say that. I know that, you know, you don't maybe agree with me, and so they try to kiss and make up type of deal, and he or she who's come over here. So the immaturity is the person who is rejecting and isolating the other person as a reaction instead of talking things through. How did I do?
Good. I just wanted to know that.
The last one is the fear of explosion. My spouse's angry outbursts over differences completely stifles resolution. People yell at each other, scream, frankly swear, hit. You say, well, no, Dave, you don't get it. This is Northern Pines. We're all Christians. Spit, punch, push. I've, in the last 18 months, had 3 different families where the police were called because of incidents. And we just don't bring it up. Don't rattle the cage. Don't let that sleeping dog lie. Just understand. Oh, I'm not going to bring that up because he'll just hit the roof. You know, she'll just go ballistic, and it'll be a wreck for 3 days, and she'll punish me for another 3 weeks with no sex. I'm not bringing it up. No way. I'm not going to, you know, I mean, like, it goes on and on like this. I deal with this all the time. And such fears grip these people, and they will not get beyond their selfishness and self-centeredness to resolve problems. Matter of fact, they resort many times to using the D word. Well, there's not much point in me standing around here. Why don't you just get a divorce anyway? Because living like we're divorced anyway, what kind of example is this to the kids? And they go off like that. We believe that using the D word or threats along that line are completely out of place if you know Jesus, because that's not his option. This is not an indictment on anybody who's been through a divorce. You know how hard it is. But I just want you to know that God's plan is that we got to work things out, and we have to slay the dragon of selfishness over and over and over again. Notice it says in 1 John 4, there's no fear in love, but perfect love drives out fear. All these fears we got. If I love my spouse well, there's a safe harbor for them to come into. Because fear has to do with punishment, has to do with isolation and reactions and everything. But the one who fears is made perfect in, is not made perfect in love. So the understanding God's love for me, he gives me freedom to love Donnellyn without fears. And that is a powerful thing.
Number 4, our fears cause our defensiveness and lead to disrespect. Now, our fears need to be understood and addressed to correct our defensiveness. And we all do have some kind of defensive mechanisms. But half of the solution to the problem is to admit that you have fears. And identify what your fears are. And even if you can, where did they come from? Why do you have those fears? And once you see the pattern of defensiveness, because it's usually there's a pattern that plays over and over. I've heard it described as a dance. You kind of fall into the same dance when you get into an argument. And the defensiveness comes out. This one yells. This one backs up. You know, whatever it is. But you have your dance that you usually go into. But once you see what the pattern is, and you understand what your defensiveness is all about, you can then deal with that fear separate from the conflict. So we're not talking about doing this in the middle of an argument. But even right now, look at what your defensive mechanisms are. Why do you have them? What are your fears? And talk about them. Deal with them now when there's nothing on the table. You're just talking about the defensiveness.
I can't help but just take a moment to read James chapter 3. And remember, put it in the context now, in marriage. In marriage, likewise, the tongue is a small part of the body, but it makes great boasts. Consider what a great force is set on fire by a small spark. The tongue in the husband and the wife also is a fire, a world of evil among the parts of the body. It corrupts the whole body. It sets the whole course of one's life on fire and is itself set on fire by hell. All kinds of animals, birds, reptiles, and sea creatures are being tamed or have been tamed by mankind, but no human being can tame the tongue. It's a restless evil full of deadly poison. And you know what, friends? If we seriously got you to write down the things your wife or your husband has said to you in a dark time in your marriage, frankly, if we added ours to the list too, it'd be a pretty dismal thing that's been said. See, so at some point, is Jesus Lord of all? I.e., right there in the confines of the bedroom when you're having a difficult time, is he Lord right there? See, because there's where it counts. Not here when I'm teaching Sunday school and waxing eloquent about what I know. But Jesus has to enter into my heart and so ripple through my life that in concentric circles, he starts to influence my primary relationships. Number one being Donna Lynn. Number two being my kids and now my in-law kids and the grandkids and then extended family, then friends, then work associates, and then the general other people we minister to like you. You need to be way out there. I shouldn't be worrying so much about really influencing you if I'm not influencing this lady by how I love her. Concentric circles of influence. God needs to work in our lives and even affect how I speak in my home. So let's look at why friction is heating you up. We're going to look at this whole area of defensiveness, this discussion starter number 11. You're going to identify how you show your defensiveness by, looking at, some of the things that you do. Do you walk out? Do you get angry? Whatever. Why do you feel you get defensive? Throw three or four words in there to explain that. What are your core fears? Check a couple of those off. And then share your answers with your spouse. We'll give you 5 full minutes on this one. So jump in.
Locked in time. Let's rewind. Do you remember when we first moved in together? The piano took up the living room. You played me boogie woogie, I played you love songs. You'd say we're playing house, now you still say we are. We built our ghetto way up in a tree we found. We felt so far away, but we were still in town. Now I remember watching that old tree burn down. I took a picture that I don't like to look at. Well, all these times they come and go, and alone don't seem so long. Over 10 years have gone. Locked in time, but you're still mine. Do you remember?
Well done again on jumping in. Let's go to the last section there. Building a history of friction resolution. Building a history that you look back, we can resolve issues. All right? So number one, all marriages have problems. Strong marriages can resolve them. All marriages have problems. Strong marriages can resolve them. A problem-free marriage doesn't exist. Real life causes real issues. The key is developing the art of resolving them. Look at Ephesians chapter 4. Follow through that passage there. It's amazing. In marriage, do not let any unwholesome talk come out of your mouth, but only what is helpful for building your spouse up according to their need, that it may benefit all those children who are listening. Oh my goodness, that's getting really personal. But only what's helpful for building your spouse up according to their need, that it may benefit all those children who are listening every day. Get rid of all bitterness, rage, anger, brawling, slander, and every other form of malice. When Paul said any other form of malice, he says, anything else that I failed to mention that's of negative, you got to get rid of that too. Powerful. There's a concept here, and I'll only be able to share it in about a minute, but if you want to read more about it, I just wrote an article about the same concept. I'll describe it to you this way. This here is, actually, I'll use, yes. This here is a problem between Donald and I. And time goes that direction according to you. There's the future, correct? So what happens is, this is the issue here, the bag with doing family right on it. This is the time we finally have it resolved and the relationship goes on without the issue. The difference between when the issue started and it's resolved is called the drag time. You see, and for some people, it's 3 years. Matter of fact, one marriage that ended up in divorce with a couple who were elders in two different churches, 37 years married, ended up divorced because she could not forgive her husband for something that happened the week before they were married. I actually told her privately, just her in my office. I said, listen, called her Sally. I said, listen, Sally, if you do not forgive your husband, you will die a bitter, lonely lady. I am a prophet. The bitterness is poisoning her. And so I want you to know something. When Hebrews says so clearly in chapter 12, verse 15, see to it that no bitter root grows up to cause trouble and defile many, it means don't let the bitterness go on, because it'll not just screw up this relationship, it'll screw up others, because the bitterness is like a cancer that spills over all over everybody. Drag time, the difference between the issue being there and the issue being resolved. Is it 3 years? Is it 3 months? Is it 3 weeks from the issue and finally getting it resolved? Is it 3 days? Well, many of you have problems that are gone way beyond 3 weeks. Still get stuff that hasn't been resolved a long time ago. 3 hours. That's getting really more God-honoring. What about 3 minutes? What about a do-over? The minute you know you said something wrong, you say, hey, I need a do-over. Forgive me, I got to say that again. I'm embarrassed to say, but one evening I was writing an article on romance and marriage. And in the middle of this article in the kitchen, I was just ready to push send, and Donald and I had words. You know, words. And as usual, she walked out of the kitchen. I was sitting there finishing, and I was just going to push send. And my Lord said, you can't push send. You'd be a hypocrite. I'm thinking, come on, God, this is on romance. I'm helping couples with romance. They need this. You can't push it. He says, you can push it if you promise to resolve things with Donald before you go to sleep tonight. Which, by the way, in Ephesians, says it pretty clear. Don't let the sun go down with you still angry. Doesn't mean you have to have everything resolved, but you can't have the anger going between you. You can agree to talk at a day or two later, but you got to get rid of the anger. Okay. I promise, God. Push send. Romance article goes to 30,000 people. Cool. I'll go upstairs. We do our usual routine. Everything's done. In bed. Light's going to go out, and I sat up in bed before the light went out. I turned around and said, honey, just want you to know, I'm really sorry for what I said downstairs. I know that, and I apologize. Sat up, turned and faced her, and apologized. I do that because that's the side I'm on. I should have done like this, but I didn't turn my back on her. But in bed, she's always on this side. So, what are you doing over the wrong spot? So I turned it, honey, which is right there. That's beautiful. Okay, good. Well, because you're wondering, he's weird. Okay, So I said, there, God, I did it. This would be a perfect time for her to apologize. Oh, yeah, you think it too, don't you? I'm doing my part. You better apologize too, because I'm being the good Christian leader here. I'm apologizing. Your turn. Da-da-da! She says, oh, thanks. Light goes out. I'm thinking, God, what the heck are you doing? I apologized to her. Why did she apologize? That's what I'm thinking, right? I'm thinking, this is really unfair, and I'm going on and on in my heart like, I'm about 15, 20 seconds into the darkness. She says, honey, I just want you to know I apologize too. And it's really cool because the drag time was maybe about 20 minutes. How well do you forgive? How well do you resolve things? What's the length of your drag time? 3 years? 3 months? 3 weeks? 3 hours? 3 minutes? The more mature the couple, the shorter the drag time.
There's a great book out, and if you have problems with saying I'm sorry, hearing I'm sorry, the book is called The Five Languages of Apology. You've heard of The Five Languages of Love, Five Love Languages? Five Languages of Apology.
Same guy, Gary Chapman.
We all hear I'm sorry differently. If Dave says, I'm sorry, but, that just erased the I'm sorry, okay? That it doesn't mean a thing to me. It's an excuse. But if I don't say, I'm sorry, how can I make it up to you? and go through the list of all the other things I need to say, he doesn't hear my apology either.
You make it sound like I had this 400 things that you have to do to get the apology right.
No, it's just four.
No, it isn't.
It's not 400.
I'm glad you've learned it. Okay, go ahead.
Okay. Be a part of the solution. Target the problem, not the person. And that's where you have to change the target from your mate to the issue.
That's where you look for Bob. Look for Bob.
And that's like where Dave gave the illustration of how we would write down, if we had a problem we knew we were not going to get through, and we were already attacking each other, just write the problem down. Agree on the problem, first of all. It was a few weeks ago, there was an issue between us, and Dave said, okay, we'll be talking, can we talk about it later? And, yes, okay. So we sat down, and Dave said, so what do you think the problem is? And very wisely, I said, well, honey, because I wasn't really sure what the problem was. And so I asked him, what do you see the problem is? And he gave me his perspective on what the problem was. It was totally different than what I would have answered. So that was number one. We had to see what the problem was because he felt more strongly about it than I did. And to be able to hear from his perspective what the problem was, sure makes it easier to target in on it when you're both on the same page about what it is. Yeah. So actually writing it, talking about what the problem is, writing it down, and then deciding what can we do about it together.
Yeah. Ephesians 4, of course, in your anger, do not sin. Do not let the sun go down while you're still angry. Get over it quickly. Shorten the drag time. Number three, focus on one problem at a time, working together to get a win. Mm-hmm. That's one of our number one things that we have in our list of rules of engagement is we are going to solve one problem at a time.
Number four, own your stuff. Don't defend it. Where do you need to change to resolve the issue? That's a question you need to ask. But even in owning your stuff, you didn't get that illustration about in the office. Okay, one time we were working on some of this material, and Dave said, well, you know, this is good stuff. Let's try it. So, we've got issues that it's just reoccurring problems, right? And so he said, let me throw a problem out there. He was quite willing to say that. And let's work on it. So he throws the problem out. My first reaction is, of course, to get defensive because I'm feeling like that's not fair right now. And
of course, you realize when one person brings up an issue, it's usually because the other person is a little more at fault. We don't usually bring up an issue that I have a problem to deal with myself, right? Let me just share something that's a concern to me. You need to work on this, basically, is what we're saying.
Yeah.
Right? Right? Okay, go ahead.
So the idea was he was going to throw out a problem, we'd work on it, and then we'd turn it around and I would throw out a problem. Okay, so let's do that. So the one he threw out, okay, the stuff we're working on right now says own your stuff.
Okay, but at first she's squirming and she's throwing out. I said, honey, let's just stay in this problem. You're going to have a chance in a moment. Let's just stand. Let's solve this one. Don't bring other things up.
So I took a deep breath and I go, you're right. That is a problem. And I need to work on that. I'm really sorry for my part in this. And I do not want to hurt you. How can I make it better? So all of a sudden, what happened to the problem? Dave has no ammunition left because I've apologized. I've asked for forgiveness. I've owned the stuff. And it was, how many years do we have to be married before this light bulb comes on and goes, wow, this is an easy way to get through an issue. And
so then she brought up a problem, and now I was feeling what she felt a moment ago about wanting to bring up other things and kind of deflect and duck and not own it, right?
And it's really easy to say, one issue at a time, honey.
Exactly.
Stick with this one.
So then I owned my stuff, and I said, hey, you know what? I was wrong here. Would you forgive me? And it's really funny how it takes the steam of the argument when people start owning their stuff.
But you have to get brave and admit that you do have problems. And you might have to admit it to yourself first. But it sure makes it go away fast.
The foolish spouse mocks at making amends for sin. But goodwill, good relationships between husband and wife is found with those who are upright in heart when you do it God's way.
Number five, determine your rules of engagement. That's where you need to identify and talk about the skills you want to use and how to have a fair fight. There is such a thing as a fair fight, because if it's unfair, one person doesn't feel like it's resolved in the end, right? Mm-hmm. If it's a fair fight, you've got rules, you stick with the rules that you've agreed on, and you get through the issue and get to a resolve that is good for both of you. And you know what? Here, let me give you one rule. If you can't say anything nice, if you don't have anything nice to say...
don't say anything at all.
Right. Said that the other day, too bad. I mean, we teach that, don't we? We teach that to our kids. We teach them how to have a fair fight, how to treat people right. That can be part of your rules of engagement. Why can't we use that with the person that we say we love the very most in this world, but we expect our kids to use it? And, I mean, there's just rules that just make sense and that are for the good of both of you.
And you also, beyond getting rules of engagement, which is your next project, but you're going to define what success in conflict resolution is for each of you. What does it mean for us to have success? And there's some options there actually in the assignment you'll look at. Maybe you'd say, hey, we want to shorten our drag time, all right? But look what it says in Romans 12:12. It's a whole bunch there, but it's beautiful. In your marriage, be joyful in hope, patient in affliction, faithful to keep praying for one another. So we're going to jump into the next assignment there, discussion starter 12. It's pretty straightforward. There is actually 30 different rules of engagement there, okay, in your manual there on page 49. There's 30 different rules. Just know that the gap between 10 and 11 is just to ease your eyes a little bit. There's just groups of 10 to make it easier to look through, okay? And so all you're going to do is you're going to go through and you're going to decide which six principles to you are the ones that are really need to be in your rules of engagement. How you guys are going to have your discussions, your arguments, right? What are you're going to choose six. Then of those six, you're going to put a star beside three that to you are non-negotiable. They have to be in. And then what you're going to do, you'll see on the next page, you're going to write down his numbers and her numbers, which one's non-negotiable. And then you're going to choose eight. Now, because you could technically have 12 different rules of engagement. Well, that's too many to remember. But eight's not a bad number. So you're going to have to actually resolve which ones you're not going to include. So obviously, his and her three non-negotiables will be in there. Those will be six, unless there's some redundancy. So this is going to be an eight-minute project, because you need to work through this and get your numbers chosen, your rules of engagement, okay? So have some fun. We'll put a couple songs through, Peter, and we'll let them solve by getting their rules of engagement. All right.
Thank you.
sorry. I just need to say, sorry to interrupt. I just have to tell you, Dawn and I are just really taken back by how you guys are jumping into this. To hear that balloon back and forth, and you know, it's just really cool because you're obviously wanting to deal with things and have a better relationship, and we're really proud of you. Take a moment here in the next 30 seconds to go to the back flap and write in something under the friction one. Okay, that's got to happen because I got a couple things I'm going to walk you through, but just, you know, you can be listening and jotting a few things down. Remember, there's a wonderful prayer about resolving friction between you. If this is one of your biggest issues, ongoing friction, then you need to look at this prayer and use it as a guide. There's a project there about applying the rules of engagement, how you can actually try it out. There's the article about friends of the marriage. We talked about that early. Great article there about the kind of people you need to look for to have in your life. A bonus one there on page 55, how to get to know your spouse better and see if you can nail it on the true-false there. And while you're jotting down that principle, at the end of the tables out there, Donald and I have updates about what we're doing, where we're going. Matter of fact, over 3,000 people received the fact that we're at Northern Pines this week to be praying. And some of you already from 3 years ago have been tracking with us and praying and at least following our ministry. And I figure even 10% of the people might pray in a day. That's 300 people praying for what we believe God wants us to do. And if you'd like to sign up to be get those updates, the other thing we send out is once a month to your inbox, we send out an e-magazine that has a topic of interest to keep your marriage going stronger. And so one of my staff puts that out every month. It comes and you can look at it at your discretion. And that. So these will be available at either end of the table out there to sign as you want. Now, remember that tomorrow is the optional session, the second session in the morning, so like the 11 o'clock slot. And normally, this is a six-part series. We're only doing five. The fifth part is the spiritual dimension, okay, which is the last section. We call it finale. And because the other two speakers are doing such a great job of braiding God into your lives, Dean and I agreed that that would be the one that we let them do with their eight sessions, and we wouldn't try to do that one. But I want to give you the key words. So if we could go to the next slide, the finale, I got them all on, go ahead, all three there. There's three key words you got to write in on that one page. I think it says the page 74 there, because you won't have this, and your book won't be complete, and especially for some of you who are a little, it's not complete. We need some words, okay? It's right here. You never regret putting your marriage and family first. Jesus makes the non-negotiable difference in your life. And the wisest thing you do is to braid God into your marriage. And so first, difference, and braid are the three words on page 74. And then the number one principle we were going to teach, go to the next slide, please, Peter. Is this. Our challenge, Donald and I challenge you to be that sometime in the next few days before you leave here, that you and your spouse would just get alone and together recommit your life and your marriage to the Lord. That was the heart of what that message is. You've got to take time to do this. You say, well, we're already Christians. That's great. But what Donald, at 25 years married, we recommitted our vows to each other. We have an anniversary. We just celebrated 40. We had 10 days in Spain together. We were recommitting to each other. Do it often. Recommit your life to Jesus often. To pray with your spouse. Let's all we heard from Vic and from Steve and from Dave and Donna Lynn. Let's practice that. Jesus, help us. You be the Lord of our marriage. Pray that this week sometime. All right? Just get alone and just a few minutes to do that. We really think that would be wise. So I think that's it for me. Blessings on you. And we'll be talking.